This is Akashvani. In the weekly program, Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on significance of President's upcoming visit to Fiji, New Zealand and Timor-Leste. The participants are Professor Swaran Singh, International Relations Expert, and Deeksha Saxena, Akashvani Correspondent.
President Draupadi Murmu will be visiting Fiji, New Zealand and Timor-Leste from 5th August to 10th August. The visit is significant in terms of India's focus to the Indo-Pacific and also the Act East policy. India shares a very strong and deep connect with these countries. This will be the first ever visit by a head of the state from India to Fiji and Timor-Leste. To discuss the subject in detail, we have with us Professor Swaran Singh. Professor Singh, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Deeksha, for having me on your program today.
Professor Singh, President Draupadi Murmu is visiting Fiji
at the invitation of her counterpart, William Katanive.
I would first like to delve into the history of India-Fiji relationship.
It's very interesting to begin to think of India's relations with Fiji from historical perspective. It's sometime during the colonial times that Britishers had taken large number of Indians, particularly from north of India, UP and Bihar, into plantations in Fiji in that sense. And that continues to be an important focus. We have about 38% of population of Fiji, which is of Indian descent. And therefore, it's most important to underline cultural and people-to-people relations. And some of these people of ethnic Indian origin have also been very, very powerful in politics. And we have seen even in difficult times. For example, Fiji had a coup in 1987 or in 2000. India became a major voice for ensuring stability and taking that issue all the way to United Nations and so on. And therefore, I think it's important to underline people-to-people relationship, and that old story of colonial times of sugar industry continues even today, as that being an important sector for India's investments there in sugar industry. And more recently into biofuels, which is where the global climate change transition is again bringing India and Fiji together. And of course, a whole lot of other sectors of health and education, climate change, all sort of other cooperations are important to underline. And that is why Indian President, when she's there, among other things, like she's going to address Parliament or meet Prime Minister or President and also address Indian diaspora. And I think that is a very significant part of how India connects or how Indian leaders connect when they visit foreign countries. And Fiji, in that case, presents a very unique case of long history of relationship and a large number of people of Indian origin being very important segment, important component, important part of the total population. As I mentioned, about 38% of population of Fiji being of Indian descent. And that, I think, makes a very unusual connection of India and Fiji.
Professor Singh, you have spoken at length about India-Fiji relationship. So now breaking up your answer, I would first like to ask you the significant president's visit in this time. Like before this, none of the head of the states had visited Fiji. So why is it important in the current times and how is it going to bolster our ties in future?
I think in that sense of strategic significance of Fiji for India, it is important to remember that this is the 10th year of India's Act East policy that was enunciated by Prime Minister Narendra Modi in the 9th East Asia Summit in 2014. And that has since expanded itself into India's Indo-Pacific strategy or Indo-Pacific vision, to which again Prime Minister had outlined India's vision in Shangri-La Dialogue in June of 2017. So Fiji forms a very important key player or hub in ensuring connectivity, ensuring maritime security and so on. And you remember the whole revival of relationship had happened during 2015 visit of Prime Minister Narendra Modi during the second summit meeting, India Pacific Islands Forum summit meeting. And in that sense, in contemporary times, I think in more recent times, Fiji has become an important strategic and defense partner of India. In 2017, we had a defense cooperation agreement, and there is also ISRO has a satellite tracking station there. So in that sense, that makes the relationship much more significant, and that explains why India then chooses to also send head of state now, which you mentioned is the first time India's head of state is visiting Fiji. And therefore, there are a whole sort of connections, but largely with the Indian focus on Act East policy, Far East focus, and then of course Indo-Pacific focus, which makes Fiji a very close friend and enormous domestic constituencies that support India's strong relationship, economic, political, cultural, and so on. And that makes it very significant that I think important exchanges and visits should take place between India and Fiji. And in that context, I think the visit of Indian president is going to also create that new enthusiasm. And obviously, they'll be signing a whole lot of new agreements. I understand that in Fiji, among other things, she's going to lay foundation stones of creating a new building for India's chancery. She's going to lay foundations of a 100-bed hospital there, also for residential quarters for the staff of Indian chancery there. So a lot of actual investments, decisions, and construction-related activities going to be part of her visit, which is a fairly packed visit. And I think that shows that when you have a hectic, hyperactive engagement with a country like Fiji, which is located in a very interesting Western Pacific area, where these islands have become focused of all great powers. In fact, China is engaging them seriously, Australia, United States engaging them seriously. So also India's engagement has seen a little new enthusiasm in engaging that whole region, in which Fiji is a very important hub to connect India in that entire larger region. And that makes, I think, this very important that head of state of India is paying a visit to Fiji this time.
Professor Singh, before I ask you about other details of India-Fiji relationship, I would specifically like to bring your focus to, as you spoke about the strategic importance of Fiji for India. I would like you to decode how important Fiji's location is for India and why is India so much interested in the country of late?
Diksha, this can be answered at various levels. I mean, for example, let's look at, first of all, bilateral level. Countries that begin to develop defense cooperation is a clear example of very strong trust between two nations. So from 2017, as I mentioned, India now regularly does joint training exercises, regular discussions and debates on maritime security, on piracy, on illegal fishing and so on climate change related issues. That's at the bilateral level. Then Fiji is also important, I mentioned, in terms of the whole gamut of countries described as Western Pacific Island nations. And they have a very important Pacific Islands Forum, which in climate change debates has become very significant, but it's not just climate-focused connection that major powers are today building in these island nations. They are also significant in terms of as the world is moving to engage with oceans, from continents to oceans. And these are islands that have always been engaged with oceans. So it could be just fisheries, but it could be tourism. It could be, you know, sort of nodules on the surface of oceans in terms of harnessing all kinds of resources at the seabed. And in that sense, I think they also present a certain number of countries that, you know, vote in various other forums, whether it is United Nations or in climate change summit meetings or in other ASEAN-related, ASEAN-centric initiatives in that region. So when Indo-Pacific has become kind of a global focus, all major powers have issued their Indo-Pacific strategies in about last 5-6 years. And in that sense, when the whole world is looking at Indo-Pacific, there is one way to engage the littoral nations, which are continental states, but other equally important is to engage the island states that exist. And these island states of Western Pacific occupy a very large part of Pacific Ocean, and therefore they are significant for sea lanes of communication to ensure free and fair trade. But it is also important to keep an eye on what other major powers, particularly a lot of Western countries, are always concerned about what is China doing in that part of the world, because access to these set of islands gives you access to a very large part of Pacific Ocean. And when India's focus and focus of all major powers is on Indo-Pacific, I think in that sense also Fiji is very, very important hub, as I mentioned, for ensuring the connectivity of India in the larger region, not just to littoral, but also to island states. And of course, also to focus on initiatives on climate change, on maritime security, anti-piracy initiatives, etc. So there's a whole range of reasons that explain why India is interested in engaging Fiji and other island nations in the region. And it also means that these initiatives are making enormous change on the ground. So in the sense of India's contributions to sectors like health and education, India has made important contributions. And that is also partly important because, as I said, 38% of people there are actually of Indian descent. And that is also a connecting of India with Indian diaspora in that sense. So multiple ways to understand why Fiji is important and why regularly high-level visits should continue to happen between India and Fiji.
Professor Singh, earlier you had mentioned FIPIC. Circling back to that, Forum for India-Pacific Island Countries of FIPIC is a testament to India and Fiji's warm relationship. FIPIC was inaugurated by Indian Prime Minister in Suva back in 2014. So I would like you to explain this to our listeners. What is FIPIC and how important it is for India and the other Pacific nations? Though you have briefly explained about India's engagement with the island nations, but a little bit on FIPIC too.
I think FIPIC, nice that you brought it up, Diksha, because that gives an enormous opportunity for any country, like in this case India, to engage with a large number of national leaders of these island countries at one forum. And it is not just advantage of being able to meet all of them at one point in time under one venue. It also means taking collective initiatives as to how these nations together are looking at resolving several challenges, whether challenges are of terrorism or piracy or climate change, and how can India contribute to their well-being, economic development, healthcare, and so on. And in that sense, each sovereign nation, again, has a voice in international forums, and if India engages these many heads of national leaders in one forum on a certain frequency, that creates sort of India's goodwill in international forums, and India will both be able to echo their concerns on important forums where India plays an important role. Like I mentioned, India has been in UN Security Council 8 times as a non-permanent member. And it's significant if India is sitting on UN Security Council, whether India can also bring up issues of Global South or issues of these Pacific Islands into what is to be debated at UN Security Council or in other forums like East Asian Summit. So in that sense, I think it's a great connect that the forum collectively makes it much more effective and efficient for any external player like India to go and understand them, engage them, and build partnerships with them. Whether, you know, there are also issues of energy, for example. Some of these islands have resources of gas and oil. In that sense, that kind of cooperation can also be thought of. I think fast forward movement of collectively engaging these island nations is what makes that platform FIPIC extremely significant. And India has been lately engaging these. After 2015, we had a visit by Indian Prime Minister again to Papua New Guinea to attend a similar third FIPIC summit meeting. And the whole warmth which was shown to the way Indian Prime Minister was welcomed there, I think, was issue of media headlines and debates for several days after that event happened. So I think it's also the kind of warmth and bonhomie with which India is engaged by these nations when they meet in FIPIC meetings with India. It makes that, I think, regional forum extremely very effective and efficient way of engaging this large number of island nations by India.
Professor Singh, you spoke about bonhomie, and my next question is actually about humanitarian assistance and disaster relief by India in Fiji. Do you view this as a tool of soft diplomacy?
Absolutely. In fact, the whole world now wants to engage at global level, particularly great powers want to engage at global level, not using hard power. Hard power has become out of fashion. Nobody likes to build relationships. Of course, there can be defense cooperation, but to go out and project your power is done now in terms of soft power. And starting from 2004 tsunami, the whole focus of major naval powers, and India is one of them, had shifted to humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. So, in fact, most of the naval exercises of major powers, for example, the Malabar naval exercises, where Australia, Japan, India, US together now do exercises, the focus of these exercises is primarily on how to ensure humanitarian assistance and disaster relief. And India always participates in such exercises. And the most recent example that comes to my mind is just 2 months back in May, there was a tragic landslide in Papua New Guinea, and India, along with Australia, Japan, US, immediately pledged about $5 million worth of aid, and on the ground action is in place to provide relief to them. So overall, I think when you look at the drift from land to oceans, maritime security and maritime domain awareness are areas which have become extremely significant. You see nations going out and focusing on humanitarian assistance and disaster relief as what major powers, major naval powers can deliver to several nations around the world, particularly to island states, and some of the island states who are literally seen as far away. You know, Pacific Ocean is the largest ocean, and somewhere in the middle are these island states, and it's not always easy to constantly, quickly access them. And in providing relief, time is at premium. Time is most significant. And therefore, if you can train your naval forces to go out and provide that kind of relief, And also equally issues of piracy and how to fight piracy problem in sea lanes of communication around the oceans. So I think that focus has clearly shifted, where major naval powers are now contributing increasingly to disaster relief and humanitarian assistance. And India is really a very, very substantial player in that whole exercise. And when India looks at Indo-Pacific, of course, this whole littoral and island states remain an important focus of India building connectivity and maritime security along with these nations.
Professor Singh, we spoke at length about Fiji. And now I would like to draw your focus to President's visit to New Zealand, the second leg of our three-nation tour. The visit begins on 7th of August and will continue till 9th of August. She is expected to hold a number of meetings and attend a number of programs in New Zealand. During her visit to New Zealand, she will be hosted by the Governor General, Cindy Keiron, and Prime Minister Christopher Luxon. I would also like to mention this, that this will be the second visit by the head of Indian state to New Zealand after President Pranab Mukherjee visited the country in 2016. So again, my question to you is, how do you view this visit of Indian President to New Zealand and how significant it is in the current global order?
I think New Zealand also is very interesting because it also has a good number of people of Indian descent there. Nearly 2 lakh people. Actually, 175,000 plus people in New Zealand are those of Indian ethnic origin, of which interestingly 23,000 are students. New Zealand also is an important destination for Indian students to go for education there. But we also remember that during the time of Cold War, New Zealand, Australia and US had a defense pact called ANZUS Pact. And therefore, India had, you know, at that time been non-aligned nation, trying to avoid any military alliances, had kept a certain distance from New Zealand, Australia, and of course also United States in that sense. So there was a whole period of time when India did, for example, in 1952, diplomatic recognition was given to New Zealand, diplomatic ties were established. They would also sit together throughout that period in Commonwealth of Nations meetings. For example, both were British colonies at some stage, and later they had even joined together in East Asian summits from 2005. But I think this whole reconnect has happened primarily in the context, again, of India's Act East policy, India's Indo-Pacific approach. And that is why I think lately, again, there is a far more hyperactive connection initiatives. We saw in 2017, after President Pranab Mukherjee's visit, they had started India-New Zealand cyber dialogue. They also focus on tourism, is another very interesting connect. Indian film industry likes to do film shooting in that. Also, after India and Australia, the Melbourne University started an India-Australia Institute, University of New Zealand in Victoria. Victoria University also has set up since then what is called India-New Zealand Research Institute, which has about 40 experts. So that's a dedicated institute that constantly works on how to enhance connectivity, how to build better relations between two. And therefore, I think it's not a too small state, but a small state compared to Indian population. But nevertheless, because there is a substantial amount of number of people who are of Indian ethnic origin, Indian students are there. And that, I think, is the constant connect that stays. They have embassies. India has embassy in Wellington. There's a New Zealand embassy in Delhi. Then there is, of course, honorary consulate in Auckland. Likewise, they have an honorary consulate in Mumbai. But there are also old tensions of military alliances where India was shying away. Now when India is building partnerships, for example, when India finally withdrew from the whole this largest free trade area agreement called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, RCEP, this was one issue that came up between India and New Zealand or India and Australia about agricultural subsidies, about milk and milk products, etc., could be delivered cheaper than, you know, it could impact on Indian micro, small and medium industries. So sometimes there are also once in a while irritants, but there is also enormous cooperation. There is also defense cooperation, I must mention. There are joint military exercises that have happened. Their forces work together and they have shared several UN peacekeeping missions. So there are a whole lot of areas where India and New Zealand are working together. But one wouldn't completely rule out that there are also areas of irritation sometimes, especially when you are trying to build trade and expand economic relationship, then there are sometimes issues.
Professor Singh, in detail you explained India and New Zealand's relationship, but I would like to draw your attention attention to specifically two areas of cooperation. One is defense and the other one is education. I believe that President Draupadi Murmu is also about to address the Indian students in New Zealand. So how are we cooperating on the front of education, one? And second, can you please discuss in detail about the defense agreements?
I think, as I mentioned, that there was an initial reluctance because of ANZUS military pact that India wanted to stay away. But since then, there is a defense cooperation agreement between two states which allows them to do exchange of officers. For example, in our military institutions, we receive some of their officers. Likewise, our officers can go and attend their military institutions courses or join military exercises, then debates and discussions on common issues, again, like dealing with piracy, dealing with climate change crisis, and so on. So there are a whole lot of areas where militaries work. And again, militaries, when they do exercises, for example, they're not only focused on conventional war focus, etc., but there are a whole lot of other areas where they can work together. And as you mentioned, Prime Minister Murmu is going to address an education conference, address Indian diaspora, Indian students, and that is showcasing that India is trying to expand possibilities in education sector, in defense cooperation. Areas within these where, you know, they can easily work together. And I made mention of that New Zealand India Research Institute, which plays a very important role as it has about 40 plus dedicated people who are doing work on building that intersectoral connectivity between these two nations. So there is a constant effort on both sides to reconnect, and particularly when, you know, whole world is talking about India emerging now as being the fifth and soon to be fourth largest economy. There's a little impressive growth rates that India is showcasing. India is not only receiving more FDI, India is now going out and investing. And, you know, India's aid and assistance has also increased over a period of time. So with that kind of surge and growth rates in Indian economy, I think all nations, including then, of course, New Zealand, is getting more interested in engaging with this country so that they can build a trade and investment relationship to benefit from this whole upsurge in Indian economy, showcasing good performance in the last few years.
Professor Singh, the bond between India and New Zealand is rooted in their shared history as former colonies of the British Empire. I would like to ask you that how does people-to-people connect? How does it play as a game changer in the diplomatic ties between any two countries? And specifically, I would also like to ask you about New Zealand. How is it going to bolster our ties with the people-to-people connect?
I think very clearly, first of all, it is important to understand that this had come to be an important focus even during Prime Minister Vajpayee's time, when we had started having Pravasi Devas every 2 years and building that connect and celebrate people of Indian origin around the world who have made great strides in their own sectors. And that connect has, I think, been really catapulted much more strongly during Prime Minister Narendra Modi's prime ministership, starting from the very first visit to United States in September of 2014. Now, wherever Indian Prime Minister goes, he's made sure that connect with Indian community, both Indian citizens and people of ethnic origin of Indian subcontinent, must become a strong bridge between India and all these other countries where Indian leaders visit. And therefore, when you have a country like New Zealand, where you have a good number of Indians or Indian origin people there, I mentioned about 175,000 people there are that of Indian ethnic origin, and about 23,000 Indian students are there. And with the growth rate of India's economy, all of these Indian diaspora people around the world feel much more proud in connecting with India, feel much more, you know, enthusiastic in demonstrating, projecting that connect with India. And therefore, they become an important bridge between India and engaging with that local country. So we are now noticing that even during visits by Indian president, that connect is being privileged as an important event, and of the visit, a certain time should be allocated to Indian head of state also engaging with Indian community. And, you know, these people work in different sectors, and in many of these countries like New Zealand, they are also successful business people. They are successful in education, in even bureaucracy. They hold important ranks. And that, I think, germination of sense of Indian identity among them is going to help almost on day-to-day basis as to how to implement various initiatives that India and New Zealand want to take together. And that creates a very strong constituency in across several sectors in the host country where Indian head of state is visiting, where some announcements, some initiatives, agreements will happen when the head of state or when Prime Minister visits New Zealand. But how will they be implemented from both sides on the ground. I think that is where this connect with Indian diaspora, which is, as I said, part of last 10 years now, very important focus on connecting with diaspora, so much so that India now even looks at individual citizens, not just in large number of community, when large number of Indian diaspora is in under threat in Middle East wars, for example, but starting from Sushma Swaraj, she had started, even if a single Indian is in distress anywhere in the world, it becomes responsibility of Indian state. So that increasing focus of connecting with Indians abroad plays a very important role. And I think that is why we will notice that President Murmu will also be addressing Indian diaspora there, addressing an education conference to make sure that the pride of India connect of those people, even if they are citizens there, their loyalty, of course, is first to New Zealand. But that consciousness of India connect is very important to take forward building partnerships across several sectors. And I think that is what is making it important that Indian president also, likewise, as Prime Minister does every time he's going abroad, addresses and connects with Indian diaspora in countries. In fact, in all three countries she's visiting, Indian president is going to connect and address Indian community also.
Professor Singh, you rightly mentioned that the heads of the states maintain this and even president is going to address the Indian diaspora. So I would like to bring your attention to Timor-Leste. That would be in the third leg of our visit. So can you please explain our listeners briefly about Timor-Leste, India and the relationship between the two nations and what would be the way going forward?
Timor-Leste is the latest nation to be independent now. And it's right now observer in ASEAN. It could become a full member. In fact, India last year announced that India will have its embassy in Timor, let's say, in Dili. The capital is called Dili. And therefore, I think that connect also is becoming important. But again, that's interesting to see that even with what was earlier called East Timor or Timor-Leste now, India's connect is, you know, early modern times, about 17th century onward, Indians had started reaching out to that part of the world, primarily in search of sandalwood. And of course, we shared the link of Portuguese colonialism, both parts of India and Timor, let's say at that time was Portuguese colonies. In fact, at some stage, the viceroy of Goa used to be administering East Timor. From here, during 17th century, Goan missionaries would go to East Timor to, you know, expand Christianity, Catholicism in that sense. And later, of course, Indians also went to East Timor during various wars as soldiers. They were sent there as bureaucrats, but also large number of people from here going there as immigrant labor. And that continued to be happening till almost end of 19th century. But more recently now, the relationship again is much more focusing on economic. India is engaging in terms of investing in gas and oil. Reliance Petroleum, for example, in 2006, since then is working and exploring gas and oil in two blocks. Then there is a good amount of presence of Tata Motors there. So economic relationship also is being evolved and the diplomatic relationship. So far, I think it's the ambassador from Jakarta who covers Timor, let's say. But now we are also, I think, going to have Foreign Minister Dr. Jaishankar just announced in Vientiane again the commitment that we are going to open an embassy in Tili city of Timor, let's say. So I think it's again a new enthusiasm of India engaging with the larger region in which each of these states become very important key partners of India. And Timor, let's say, also I think is latest entrant in the partnership of India in the region. Of course, as I said, relationship goes far back, but diplomatic, political, economic relationship is more recent and is again happening fairly fast.
Professor Singh, we are also waiting to see Delhi-Dili connect. MEA also spoke about today, and I would like to thank you for sparing your time and giving your valuable inputs. Thank you so much for participating in this discussion.
Thank you, Diksha.
You were listening to a discussion on significance of President's upcoming visit to Fiji, New Zealand and Timor-Leste. The participants were Professor Swaran Singh, international relations expert, and Diksha Saxena, Akashwani correspondent. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashwani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsttalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.